history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some stories there that need to be told, and we're always better off when we take the time to listen. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And as we take that journey, we learn so much. We're educated, we're entertained. So often we end up inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. This idea of capturing our veterans' memories while they're still here to share them is something that has really taken off in recent years. I've always felt that while we only bring you the story of one World War II veteran a week on Hometown Heroes, the hope is that some of you listening would be motivated to talk to the veterans in your life about what they did and what they went through. And I know it's happening. So many of you have shared really powerful stories of what those conversations have led to. And every once in a while, I get the chance here to introduce you to other individuals or organizations who are doing great work in this realm, and that's the case today. Whether you do it while you're listening to today's program or later, I hope you have some time to go online and check out picturesforheroes.org. I have it linked for you also at hometownheroesradio.com, but at picturesforheroes.org, you can find incredibly striking portrait-style photographs of dozens of World War II vets taken by a talented and dedicated young photographer named Zach Coco. Some of these photos have appeared in the LA Times. His efforts have been trumpeted by People Magazine and other media entities. And if you're a regular listener, you've heard me mention Pictures for Heroes every once in a while when our efforts have overlapped. It's not too often on this program that I can refer to somebody younger than myself, so I'm going to enjoy it while it lasts. The perspective that this young man has as the result of his interactions with World War II vets, I think, is really worth hearing. So I hope you'll listen closely as we get to know him, but also some of the men that he's photographed. I'm going to be referencing, and so will he, specific photos that you can find on his website, picturesforheroes.org. One of my personal favorites is a photo he took of Pearl Harbor survivor Stu Headley reading from the journal that Stu kept during his Navy days. The events of December 7th, 1941 are inscribed there in ink, and of course indelibly etched into the memory of this spirited sailor who was on the battleship USS West Virginia that fateful morning. Before we hear from Zach Coco about Pictures for Heroes, here's a taste of the kind of stories that are behind his photos. What a 20-year-old Stu Headley experienced at Pearl Harbor, December 7th, 1941.
When I reached for my hat, I got kicked right in the seat of the pants by a first-class bosun mate, Hicks. Get to your battle station on the double. This is the real thing. I grabbed my hat and ran on top sight. Planes are diving from every direction. And similar to this, a gun sets up off the deck. Mm-hmm. And it's all open underneath. I saw this pilot, Lieutenant White, shooting with his .45. Well, I dove under there with him. Now, I'm a seaman first class. He's a lieutenant commander, so I'm not going to question. But I'm thinking. And he says, son, where's your battle station? And I put it up to gun 3. He says, get up there as fast as you can. As I was going up the ladder to get in the turret, here come a Japanese torpedo plane down the port side. I could see the pilot, the radioman, and the co-pilot laughing like everything. I got inside the turret, and Krausen was already in the trainer's seat. Nobody was up on the gun deck, no shellmen or rammers or anybody. So I went down to my battle station. When I go out to the schools, I put on a little demonstration. I point out how the Lord protected me. When I was 9 years old, I used to like to sit in the chair and lean back on the back two legs. My dad only spoke twice. Third time he acted. And you, yes, sir, and no, sir, in our house. Mm-hmm. So I was in the kitchen, and I'm leaning back on the back two legs. My dad walked in. Stuart, they made four legs and a chair to sit on the floor. Yes, sir. But how quick a 9-year-old forgets. So next time I'm leaning back, my dad says, Stuart, I'll not tell you again. Yes, sir. In this ear and out that ear. So the next time I'm leaning back, my dad walked in the kitchen, kicked the bag leg out from underneath me. I cracked my head on the floor. I said, there's got to be a better way. Now you see my legs back up under. That's 9 years old, a habit that I learned. I'm now 20 years old, and I'm in my battle station. Normally, my feet would be on a platform. I would be bent over cranking in the dials for the elevation that they want that gun raised. So now I'm in my battle position, but we're not going to fire these 16-inch guns in Pearl. We'll blow Pearl Harbor off the map.
Yeah.
And so consequently, my feet were back up underneath me. I'm on a high stool. No back. JA phones on. And we could hear the machine gun bullets hitting the turret. We felt the thud of a torpedo. And Krausen says, Stu, let's see what's going on. We took the sight cap off our periscope and bam, there went the Arizona. And I estimated there were about 32 bodies that flew through the atmosphere.
So I want people to understand what you're saying here, because very few people actually saw the Arizona
explode.
They saw the aftermath. They saw the smoke, or they heard it and they turned.
We saw it.
You looked into this viewfinder right before the bomb hit.
And see, I immediately thought that a bomb went down this stack because it looked like the ship broke in half. When I met this fellow here, I found out the truth. Jack McCarran was one that was blown off the ship into the burning oil. But he later informed me that he had been informed that an armor-piercing shell went through the starboard side of the forecastle right into number one handling room. There's 1,000 bags of black powder in each one of the handling rooms. That exploded. That set off turret two. That's what broke the ship in half.
But you're a 20-year-old kid.
I'm a 20-year-old brat growing up overnight.
And you're looking at a ship just like yours, another battleship, blowing up and bodies flying through the air.
Yep.
How do you react to that?
Startled, surprised, but waiting for the next scenario.
Sure.
Because the next scenario was an armor-piercing shell dropped from a high-level bomber came through our turret. And what he'd done, he took 15-inch armor-piercing shells. Mm-hmm. They welded fins on them so that they would spiral. Well, over top of our left gun is a catapult, and I called it a slingshot. And we had two airplanes on that catapult that morning. One was a scout observation plane, an SOU-2, and the other was the Kingfish, the Admiral's plane. Well, the scout observation is a biplane.
Yeah.
The top wing is the gas tank. The Admiral's plane is a single wing. And when that shell hit, it hit the top wing of the scout plane. The gasoline exploded, burnt the plane to a crisp, split that catapult in half, and came down through 5 inches of steel right into the left gun. And the reason I'm here today is because that shell did not explode.
You can always access Stu Headley's entire story at hometownheroesradio.com, but please do take a look at the photo of Stu with his diary at picturesforheroes.org. And to understand more about the effort behind it, we bring in photographer Zach Coco to explain what Pictures for Heroes is and where it came from.
Pictures for Heroes is a legacy preservation project. It started after the death of my grandfather. He was a World War II Navy vet. So after he died, I realized that generation is leaving us pretty quickly. So I wanted to make it my mission to interview and photograph as many World War II veterans as possible to preserve their legacies for future generations to learn from.
So this is something you already had a skill for? You'd already been doing some photography? Or where did you get this idea? You know, still photographs of these guys in their 80s and 90s are going to be something that we can treasure.
Yeah, photography is my background professionally. I studied in high school and college and currently work as a freelance photographer. So I took that skill set and combined it with, you know, interviewing these gentlemen to put a face with the story. So you have both aspects there.
And how do people react to that? I mean, when you told your family, your friends, what you wanted to do, what was some of the feedback you got?
It's been nothing but great response. I've learned a lot from doing it, history-wise, and I'm able to share that knowledge and those facts with my friends and family as well. So they're fascinated by the stories. I tell everybody it's like listening to a movie script every time I sit down with one of these veterans. So a lot of it is just unbelievable.
And you mentioned your grandfather as the inspiration, but if people were listening, they heard you say it was after he passed that you got this idea. So is that partly wishing you would have had the chance to do this with your grandpa?
Yeah, I'd always had the idea while he was still alive, and it's one of those instances where you don't necessarily seize the moment, and you don't realize what you have until it's gone. So I never took advantage of the time I had with him, and after he passed, it was sort of a light bulb went off, and I realized that time is running out, and these guys aren't going to be here forever.
Tell me about your grandpa a little bit. What was it about him that you appreciated, and what have you come to learn about his contribution to the war?
Well, I didn't necessarily know in depth his contribution during World War II. I know he was in the Navy. He served on the USS Rushmore. He was a fireman first class, and one of the small details I know is that his ship was hit by a torpedo, and luckily it glanced off the hull and never detonated. Otherwise, I may not be here today, but he was my hero growing up. He taught me a lot about being humble, working hard, do every job for somebody as if you were to do it for yourself. So he just taught me a lot of good moral life lessons that I carry on with me today.
And when you say that, you might not be here otherwise. Was there a point where that sank into you when you found out what had happened to his ship and how close they came to getting knocked out of the water, that it kind of sunk in, that sobering thought that, yeah, really, I would have never been born?
Absolutely. And it also, looking at it from a different perspective, there's a lot of people who never were born because of those 400,000 plus soldiers that lost their lives. They never had a chance to start families. They never had a chance to have children and grandchildren. So, you know, it's mind-boggling if you keep thinking about how deep and how widespread the results of the war actually are. Because they're still going on today. You just don't realize it.
So how long have you been doing this now?
I've been working on this project for about 3.5 years. And it's evolved, a few times throughout that process. But I've gotten into a pretty good rhythm and interviewed about 70 World War II veterans up to this point.
Is what Pictures for Heroes has developed into now, is that what you set out to do? Or is it a little different? Have you been surprised by some of the things that have unfolded or developed because you decided to take this step and go after this?
I'm definitely happy with where it is. My initial goal was to just get out and interview World War II veterans. Surprisingly, the photography aspect wasn't an initial thought, but I realized that I'm a photographer by trade, so I might as well implement that. And the main goal right now is to put a book together. So I'm working on a compilation book, which will consist of 100 World War II veterans' portraits and biographies. Mm-hmm. So that's the mission I'm on right now.
When do you expect to have that book where people can order it?
I hope to have it out, published and printed by this time next year. That's the goal right now.
And when it is printed, some of those guys you photographed will still be around, and I'm sure it'll be a treasure on their coffee table. I'm sure there's some other guys that you've interviewed that are already gone. How have you handled that, getting to know these guys really at the end of their lives and probably sometimes right before they leave us?
Yeah, and unfortunately that is a reality of, you know, the field that we're in. And my goal is to get it out so those who are in the book can enjoy seeing the results. And you're absolutely right, a few have passed on already, and it's tough. You know, some you become closer to than others for, you know, no particular reason, but it hurts you. Every time I do an interview, it's almost like I get to spend another day with my grandfather. So every time I hear one of them passing, I feel that pain again. I feel for the families that lose their grandfather or father or, you know, whatever their relation is. But they appreciate having the information that we've captured, the photos that we've captured, and the interviews that we've captured, which I provide a copy of everything for the families so they have it. And that was the main goal initially, to provide that information for families so they can share it with their children and grandchildren, because I don't have that from my grandfather.
Give me an example of some of the things you've learned that you never would have learned otherwise if you weren't doing this, if you weren't going out and finding these guys and spending the time with them. What are some of the things that have been real eye-openers for you?
First thought that comes to mind is some of the tragedies that these guys lived through, specifically the Bataan Death March. I knew nothing about it initially. Those men were tortured and beaten and killed for no reason. And if they were lucky enough to survive the death march, they spent the next 3.5 years in a POW camp. And if they were lucky enough to survive that, they came out weighing under 100 pounds generally. And one gentleman in particular who actually just passed away over Memorial Day weekend, a few months shy of his 100th birthday, his name was Solomon Schwartz, and he survived all of that. But he came home with no malice in his heart. He forgave the day he got out of camp. And to be subject to that sort of treatment and to be able to forgive the people that put you through that, it's very inspiring. We hold grudges for very small things, the most mundane instances. So I carry that with me, and I try to live my life along those guidelines. It's not worth it.
Yeah, I imagine your perspective has been changed in a lot of ways by getting to know some of these folks and understand what they went through.
Yeah, I've been humbled a million times over, and my perspective on life has definitely changed. So I'm grateful for the country I live in and the freedoms I have today because of these men and women.
Powerful perspective from photographer Zach Coco of Pictures for Heroes. To see his photos of Saul Schwartz, that Bataan Death March survivor he mentioned, and dozens of other vets he spent time with, check out picturesforheroes.org. I have it linked for you as well at hometownheroesradio.com and the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And we'll hear more from Zach as well as more veterans when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.